Health with Temple of Health. And today we're very pleased to have with us Paul Rademacher, who's the author of A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. Paul's story is one that is very inspiring and enlightening and helps us understand how really the journey is within us. Things outside of us do affect us, but it is up to us to go within and to experience that which I guess the Bible would call the kingdom of heaven. Paul graduated from Princeton Theological Seminary with a Master's of Divinity in 1985, and he served as a Presbyterian pastor for 15 years, and currently he's the executive director of the Monroe Institute, institute very famous for its research in altered states of consciousness. Anyway, thanks for joining us, Paul. Are you calling from Virginia?
I am calling from Virginia. It's great to be with you, Dr. Kolb.
Great. I bet it's beautiful up there this time of year, isn't it?
Well, not too bad. You know, we've had lots of rain, so things have gotten real green, and the a little bit cloudy today, but it's just about right for temperature-wise.
Great. Well, I really enjoyed your book, A Spiritual Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. You have a great sense of humor.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And it's important to keep your sense of humor on this journey. And would you like to tell us a little bit about why you wrote the book and some of the, you know, the early experiences that you had that kind of put you on the path that you're on?
I'd be glad to. For me, the story kind of begins a number of years ago. I think it was back in 1981. I was in the construction business with my brother, and we were building a house and working up on a roof of the house. And I was pulling on a board, and all of a sudden, the board gave way, and I found myself careening off the roof in a very awkward position. Didn't really have time to adjust for the fall. And I landed on a pile of gravel and didn't know it at the time, but I had fractured my left hip. Mm. We had a crane there that was helping us lift things up to the roof, and I think I missed the base of the crane with my head by about 6 inches, and
well,
so maybe the wind was just blowing right. Mm-hmm. But they took me to the hospital and did some x-rays, but didn't find anything wrong with the hip, so they put me into physical therapy. And so there I am in physical therapy, and they're kind of cranking on that hip and making sure it's getting nice and loose and just, you know, so it's going to speed its healing.
So it breaks.
I am just dying, you know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and the doctor comes by after a while, and he says, you know, you don't look like you're doing so well. And I said, Doc, you know, I'm really not. And he said, let's take another look at that hip. So when they did, they found out that it was fractured. They took me out of physical therapy and put me into traction. And mm-hmm. So I'm lying in the bed with this weight off the end of the bed and my leg immobilized. And the doctor comes mm-hmm. in and tells me I'm going to be off work for quite a few weeks. When he does, I find myself going into this spiral of downward of pain and anxiety. It wasn't mm-hmm. a metaphorical spiral, but it was actual. I could actually feel myself going down. Mm-hmm. Pain because the hip was so excruciating, and anxiety because this was the busiest time of our construction year, and there was no way I could possibly be off work. So as I'm going down, all of a sudden, without any awareness or forewarning, I break through into this other reality, this other dimension. And I was still aware of my body back in the bed. I was still aware that I had this physical life, but it seemed as if I entered into this completely different world in which the pain dissipated entirely. The anxiety was replaced by complete and total peace, and I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that there were no such things as accidents, and everything had meaning and purpose. And then at one point, I was standing in front of this being of light, and we are conversing about my life, but we're not using words.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came out of that experience, I was really stunned because I didn't know really anything like this was possible or even existent, because I hadn't meditated or really done a lot of research in this.
Right.
And so when I came out of it, it was a pretty much of a life-changing event. At the time, I thought it was to answer the question that I'd been wrestling with, which was, should I go to seminary or not?
Mm-hmm.
Because I figured, well, this is the voice of God. Clearly, I go to seminary.
Right.
But over the years, I began to realize that the real purpose behind that experience was to create a hunger for me to want to get back to that world and to explore it and to integrate it into my life. And so little did I know, but it would, in one fashion or another, become my life's work from that point on.
Yeah, I had a similar experience when I had viral meningitis. I think I was about 12. I wasn't very old. And the pain was so excruciating that I couldn't even close my eyes. You know, I had such a horrible headache. And I just popped out of my body, and I thought it was great because then it didn't hurt. And then I started going right. I went into the other room. I went down and looked at the other apartment. We were in an apartment building. And you know, I really didn't want to go back in my body because I still had the headache.
Right.
But I had to.
How long would you think you were out of your body?
Oh, I don't know. I'd go in and out for a couple of days. You know, I really enjoyed running around without my body. It was it's just amazing. It's a lot of fun. But you know, I think many people who first experience that that popping out of their body consciously do so because their body is not a place that's very pleasant. You know,
it's true.
I think that's probably I did a lot of reading, as did you, afterwards to explain it. And some of the best stuff is really shifting the assemblage point, you know, out of the Carlos Castaneda's type of thing. And I guess the Monroe Institute is involved in the technology of how to consciously shift your assemblage point so that you can experience these different realities. So.
Yeah, that really is Castaneda's terminology. We don't use that same terminology,
right.
But in I think we probably talk more in terms of shifting your awareness or shifting your point of perception. Same thing in many ways, just different words to use it. But we do find that with some practice, people are able to tune in to different kinds of experiences and different kinds of realities that go beyond the physical world.
Yeah, and it can be quite helpful. Like you said, you had two ways you could go. You could probably go into a very profound depression, which would require, I don't know back then if they had so many medications as we have now, but you know, so many people are chronically medicated, and then I feel like the medications really stop their spiritual growth. I mean, it seems to me that once they get on a lot of the medications, that they, you know, their abilities to explore these various worlds greatly diminishes. Probably because it lowers their vibrational rate somehow. You know,
it could be. It's hard to say on that. I know that any kind of any kind of help that you get on that from a medicinal or not from a medicinal, but from a pharmacological perspective does kind of change your awareness on that. I know that in addiction work, for instance, one of the things that they often say is one of the first things that goes with addictions is any sense of spirituality. And I don't know whether that has, maybe it's because it moves us into a place of numbness where our range of perception or our range of feeling gets narrowed down so much that we become less able to perceive some of the more subtle realms that are available to us.
I have two things I'd like to say about addiction. I interviewed a friend of mine, Dr. Nick Dimitri, who wrote a book along with a family practice doctor after studying with Descalos, and that book is on addiction, and it's really interesting. Descalos was, of course, a master in Cyprus. He's no longer in Bali.
Yes,
but, he taught that addiction had to do with the higher realms. Every time we have a desire thought, like say we want a drink or we want to have sex if we have a sexual addiction or even cocaine, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But every time you have that desire thought, it takes a little bit of your etheric body away. And with that, it lowers your will. So it's kind of like he described the mechanism of it very, very well. But then in the Alice Bailey materials, now that's really interesting. In the Alice Bailey materials, it said that there are six Oriental Dark Masters and six Occidental Dark Masters. And one of the masters is in control of addiction. And addiction is actually a spell that's put on people that are spiritually on their path in order to stop them dead in their tracks. There's also one dark master entirely in charge of political corruption. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
It's very fascinating.
Does she get into how you begin to work with and deal with that the one in charge of addiction?
Yeah. A spell is something that is vastly misunderstood by most people. A spell is a thought form.
mm-hmm.
with an intent toward a particular outcome. And in the realm where these masters are obviously not the physical realm. You know, this is a higher, in
right.
other words, a higher realm. It means that they're the perception of the ray of the atom is further apart, and so their molecules are further apart. Doesn't mean they don't exist, though. They
mm-hmm.
would be fourth dimensional
mm-hmm.
if we had to choose a dimension. But essentially, what she's saying is, and she's not really writing this. You have to understand that Master DK gave this to her through telethought communication. So she's not writing it. She's just transcribing it.
Right.
And it's interesting because Master DK says in the foreword that this is not for the people of that time, which these books were written between 1922 and I think 1945, 22 books were written, but yet these books are written for the people at the turn of the century, which would be us, because of what's happening currently
right.
with the opening of into all of these dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And Master DK also says something really interesting. He says, I am a brother of yours, but further along the spiritual path. This does not make me better than you. It just means I have more responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
That really is. Now, Master DK is no longer in body. He was a Tibetan master in body when he transmitted these 22 books to her. And I actually bought 7 of them, and they sat on the shelf for 7 years before I ever read them. The 7-year
yeah.
cycle, you know?
Yeah, there you go, there you go. You got me kind of interested to want to go pick some of those.
Yeah,
stuff,
yeah,
go take a look at
some of those. I really have read multiple times Esoteric Healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall which one the information I just gave you was in, but they do have a compilation, which is kind of like an index to all 22 books. So
yeah.
you could look up, you know, addiction
yeah.
and
right.
find the exact book it's in.
Excellent.
So it's also, back then it was written more in shrouded language and, you know, but your experience at the Monroe Institute would allow you to go back and read it pretty easily. It would be it was very, very difficult for people living in that, say, around 1950 to really understand what was in the book.
Right.
But
right.
because we've come further and actually have experienced some of these higher realms, it's a little bit more, I guess, easy for us to read it now.
Hmm.
But it's a wealth of information. Especially about things like addiction. And also, the Esoteric Healing book says, this is my favorite line in it, and it says, disease is the result of inhibited soul life. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
So, in other words, the energy that's coming from your soul in the fifth dimension, and like the monads in the seventh dimension, but the energy coming down and giving you your life force energy can be blocked. You know, it can be blocked by a number of things, you know, bad habits. You do things, you eat food you're not supposed to, hang around with people that aren't good for you, whatever. But it
mm-hmm.
can also be blocked by certain thought forms, thinking you're better than everybody else, for example,
mm-hmm.
or thinking that, just any thought that's outside of, or feelings, jealousy, anger, all of these things block the energy that is coming in from the higher realm. So healers, you talk about when you were a Presbyterian pastor, you snuck off to do these healing sessions with some of your church members, and you
yeah.
were worried that they'd find out and you know and take you to the cleaners, which was actually very, you know, very true. They were back then.
Yeah, it was kind of living a double life in many ways. You know, there was the,
right.
the life that I had to show as being a Presbyterian pastor in the mainline church, and then there was the life that was fueled by this intense desire for the journey and for learning
mm-hmm.
more and more that seemed to fall outside the lines of acceptability in many cases.
Yeah, I also had a similar experience. I was asked to give a healing class at DeKalb Medical Center, and it was a very interesting thing. Many people came. I mean, there was a huge number of people there. And I gave one class, and it was tremendously successful. And they told me how successful it was and how they wanted me to come back, and they planned all this stuff, and then nothing. you know, nothing. The powers that be. Shut me down. That's right. I didn't really care. I mean, I wasn't making a living at it. I was on call at 6 ERs, so I probably didn't have time to do it anyway. But the idea, it was just too early. It was also, I think it was in the late 90s, and that they just weren't ready for it. Or the people were ready for it.
Do you find it shifting now, though?
I'm no longer at that hospital. I don't know. I doubt it. I doubt that hospital has shifted yet. Mm. Maybe after 2012 it will. I mean, there are still the powers that be that are in control. I mean, I think it's going to take a little bit more time for things like that. But there's many different things, many different other avenues that people can experience the, you know, these through. So it doesn't really matter that the hospitals are not quite ready for it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we were real early, kind of like you were real early in the Presbyterian Church. I'm sure that not many Presbyterian pastors were doing.
No, it was a pretty solitary journey in so many ways. You know, fortunately, I for a while there, I was part of a doctoral program up in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
where there were a group of other pastors from many different traditions who were really interested in exploring the meditation as a foundation for ministry, and for a number of years that was pretty life giving to me. But it was really an oasis in a pretty big desert.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you want to tell our listeners a little bit about how you got out of how you were guided out of that job into. And how it was a,
right.
But it's always a question of faith. I mean, it's always a test of faith, tremendous test of faith.
It always is, because it is. Inherent in any kind of a big shift like that is mm-hmm. is the question of how am I going to make a living? You know, and
right.
it's one thing if you're alone and you don't have anybody to support. But I, at
right.
that point in my life, I had a wife and 3 children, and so there was a lot of there was at stake for me personally.
Right.
I think for me, the where it really started to kick in was my wife and I were up in Toronto, Canada, and walked into the world's biggest bookstore, and it's still there. But, and at that time, it literally was the world's biggest bookstore, and
mm-hmm.
just thousands of books as far as the eye could see. And I was there for just a couple of minutes, and one book practically grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and
mm-hmm.
said, "Read me." And it was Robert Monroe's second book called Far Journeys.
Right, yeah.
Now, Robert Monroe got really famous for his 3 books that were chronicling his experience of having out-of-body experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read that book, I was so stunned because for the first time, here was somebody that was talking about similar things to what had happened to me when I fell off of the roof.
Right.
But he wasn't doing it from a perspective of theology or philosophy or mm-hmm. speculation. He was just talking about his own personal experience, and that was
right.
very, very compelling to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I, after reading that book, I read it cover to cover, could not put it down,
mm-hmm.
and got to the back end of it and said that there was a place called the Monroe Institute. And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, wouldn't it be amazing to go to a place like that because you could actually do this kind of stuff.
Right.
Second thought right after that was, wouldn't it be amazing to work at a place like that?
Right. Yeah.
Knowing that neither one was going to happen because I didn't have the time or the money to go there.
Money, yeah, right.
Right. But 10 years later, somebody paid my way to go to the Monroe Institute,
mm-hmm.
and when in the first course that I went through, that world that I experienced when I fell off the roof came back in living technicolor. I mean, it was absolutely overwhelming, so stunning. That when I came home and tried to tell my wife Jackie about it, all I could do was just weep tears of joy because
mm-hmm.
there weren't words to capture the essence of what had happened.
Right.
So I got pretty hooked on that because it was so compelling to me, and mm-hmm. I went back for a number of other programs. I even got bold enough to do some programs for a very select group in my church that used the Monroe technology, and I connected what we were doing with my understanding of Jesus as a mystic,
mm-hmm.
and it was incredibly compelling for them as well, and that was my first indication that this is really, really important work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as you can imagine, over the years, I was a Presbyterian pastor for 15 years, and there was this incredible tension between what I was doing for a living and what my heart was calling me to do, which
right.
was to get more involved with this study of consciousness and spirituality and to begin to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
In the year 2000, that tension became so great that I left the church. Mm-hmm. And 2 months after I walked out of the door of the church, I got a call from the Monroe Institute asking me if I wanted to become a residential facilitator there. And I thought, oh, my gosh, wouldn't that be something? Yeah. And I remembered what those words that had come into my head when I read Bob Monroe's book for the first time. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be amazing to work at a place like that?
Right.
And as if my future self had kind of come back and was whispering in my ear all those
Pay
years.
Pay attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true.
And then in the year 2007, mm-hmm. because of Bob Monroe's daughter, Lori Monroe, had been the executive director, and she passed away in December of 2006, and they started looking for a new executive director. And that's how I became the executive director in October of 2007. I've been in that position ever since.
Well, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Monroe Institute. I have interviewed other authors who spent, you know, or got their awakenings there, and
mm-hmm.
but I've actually never interviewed anybody who was, you know, directing the Monroe Institute or working there as a facilitator. So,
by the way, I'm not sure that I direct anything.
Okay.
I really have the feeling that it's got a life of its own, and all I'm doing is kind of hanging on by the coattails.
Right.
But it's really quite an amazing place. And I think Bob Monroe, in many ways, was a genius, and he was really led through this whole process of discovering audio technology that we use. Just to give that a little context, he started having spontaneous out-of-body experiences back in the 1950s, and
mm-hmm.
it was something that was not part of the common conversation, and so he had to find out what this was all about on his own. There weren't too many places where he could go for information, even though he tried. He was involved in radio and eventually became a vice president of Mutual Broadcasting System.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, he decided to see, since he was an expert in sound, to see if there was some way he could use that expertise to create sound signals that could help to control his own out-of-body experiences, but also to help other people to begin to explore what it would mean to move into non-physical states of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So over the years, he developed a technology that is continuing to be advanced, and it's called HemiSync. And what this mm-hmm. does is to help people to move into a balanced state in which they can begin to focus more completely on their inner world and become less distracted by the exterior world. And in the process, there has been sort of a map that's been developed of human awareness. And it's not the only map. It's just our map, and it seems to work for a lot of people. So, for instance, when you come to the Monroe Institute for your first program, we take you to certain discrete states of awareness, the first one being what we call Focus 10. And these numbers were put on there simply because we didn't want to bias people in their experience, and so mm-hmm. Bob Monroe thought that numbers were fairly neutral. So this Focus 10 state, as an example, is what we call the mind awake, body asleep state. If you've ever paid attention to when you are falling asleep, there's a period of time when you will get progressively more and more relaxed,
mm-hmm.
and then you will cross over a threshold where you lose consciousness of the physical world and you enter into non-physical kinds of experiences that maybe you recall later on waking up as dreams or lucid dreams or visions or whatever. What happens with what we do is we use this sound technology to help people to move through that same kind of progressive relaxation and then to cross over that threshold while still maintaining their normal waking consciousness. So what you've got now is a person who's able to explore these areas that are normally reserved for unconsciousness and begin to retrieve those and bring those back into the waking state and begin to integrate them.
So what are the other levels?
Okay. In the introductory program, we'll take you first to Focus 10.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is what we call Focus 12, or the state of expanded awareness, which is awareness beyond the limitations necessarily of the physical body or the five senses.
Mm-hmm.
The next destination point is what we call Focus 15, and that is the state beyond time, or the state beyond time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And the final destination that we take you to is called Focus 21, which is the bridge state between physical activity and non-physical interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so roughly we would spend a day in each one of those in the introductory course, which we call the Gateway Voyage.
Okay. And what are some of the other courses that you have?
Oh, we've got quite a few of them. For instance, we've got one where that we call Guidelines, where people can learn to access their interior guidance. Another one is what we call Lifeline, where we train people to work with those who have been deceased but perhaps have gotten lost along the way, and so we train them to make contact with those folks and then to help them to move on in their journeys.
That's like soul rescue. I went through,
yes,
you know, a training program for about 5 months.
Uh-huh.
I went to meditation, heard a voice that said, quit your job.
Did you really?
Yeah, and I was making $400,000 a year at the time as a plastic surgeon. But it was cool. It was all cool. And then I studied for 5 months with a clairvoyant group. So we did similar things, but but basically had, you know, that part of the course was called Soul Rescue. And you actually, it's actually a great service because there's a lot of souls that are not, that need to move on and sometimes causing mischief.
Well, one of the other aspects that we find about that program that I think is really interesting is that so often people will go into it thinking, you know, I'm going to rescue all these poor souls that have been lost along the way. But
mm-hmm.
one of the great advantages that happens for many people is they actually find out that they end up rescuing parts of themselves.
Right.
That have
the law of attraction comes in.
Right,
yeah.
Right, exactly. So, you know, there's a deeper sense of wholeness that can be achieved
mm-hmm.
through that program as well.
Yeah, that could be soul retrieval, too. You know,
yes.
The idea that you retrieve parts of yourself that you've lost through trauma or, you know, depression or other bad states of consciousness that you might have
right.
into. Yeah,
absolutely.
Or even past life stuff that,
right.
that needs to come back in.
Mm-hmm.
So do you do anything with looking at future lives? You know, going
yeah,
into the future to solve current problems.
We do, actually. One of the things about, say, Focus 15 that I mentioned before is
mm-hmm.
this, because it's a state beyond time, you have the ability to move both forward and backwards in time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes that can be either a future life or a past life, but it can
right.
also be interacting at many different levels. But we also have a program that is called Timelines that does focus on helping people to connect with either past or future lives and gain a deeper sense of awareness out of that.
Yeah, that stuff is fascinating because, you know, it opens you up to information and skill sets that are totally beyond, say, the technology that currently exists or the,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's
mm-hmm.
there's spiritual technologies that are really fabulous that
right,
that
right.
can help. And you know, I think a lot of our current problems are going to be solved by some of the younger kids coming in with actually conscious access to that stuff. You know, they came in with
right.
it. They don't have to take a course in it.
We've been kind of indoctrinated in our culture to a certain way of thinking. And, of course,
mm-hmm.
this kind of work and the kind of work that's happening at many different institutions at this point
mm-hmm.
does provide a different kind of worldview. It
right.
provides a different way of interacting with the world and understanding your place within it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I agree with you. If we're going to move in profitable directions for the global community, inevitably, from a Western perspective, we are going to have to start to integrate these larger perspectives that go beyond a strict preoccupation with the physical.
Yeah, and you know, when we look at our major energy problems, you know, healthcare problems, and basically the solutions are there. I mean, the solutions are already there. But there seems to be a very, very prominent negative force that is opposing all of these, that I think that that negative force is going to get less and less powerful, and then the solutions that have already come to the surface are going to come out, like the, you know, the information about alternative energy, the information about alternative healthcare. We're going to have to create a new economic system, obviously.
Right.
This one's not working.
Yeah, and it's certainly breaking down.
Yeah, and a new way of you know, perhaps a new system for government so that it's not so controlled by corporate interests and interests that diametrically oppose the common good. So, you know, I think everything we need to rebuild this world is here. And I think once the negative influences are removed, and that's, I think that's the hope for around 2012, where the, you know, the galactic alignments are occurring and certain energies will not be able to be so concentrated. I think that then these other things will come up. And I think our real hope is in the generations, the younger generations who I feel, and I don't know whether you've met the kids, but I feel they have access to information and energy outside of time space, which is what where the solutions are going to come in from.
That's really interesting that you say that. Of course, I have three children, and they're all grown up at this point, and it's been very interesting to watch them. As you know, they're kind of, I can see them struggling with this transition right now. Two of my three are trying to figure out exactly what it is that they want to do in life. And I think maybe my third is too.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the issues that they're really struggling with is this issue of service, and one, they're simply not motivated by the usual preoccupation with the material mm-hmm. benefits of this world, and they find themselves kind of at a loss to figure out how to express that part of themselves that is crying out to make some kind of a difference in the world that is beneficial to others beyond themselves. And mm-hmm. I think they're not alone in that.
I don't either. And I think that maybe the, you know, it's like a genetic expression. The genes are there. That service gene mm-hmm. is there, and yet the environment is still hostile. You know,
<it's, laughs> right.
So it's not going to express.
That's
and,
right.
You know, the whole idea of epigenetics that church and others have brought forth is that, you know, the gene, it cannot express in certain environments. But then once the environment clears out, and I think that's what's going to happen energetically after 2012. And many of the things, you know, in terms of, we have a meditation group that meets every Sunday, so we do a lot of this altered state work and
mm-hmm.
and prophecy stuff there. And
mm-hmm.
basically, you know, a lot of these things are being put off until after 2012, probably because it's going to be a whole different energetic environment. And so, you know, hopefully they'll get some clue as to what they're supposed to do, because oftentimes it requires some education or some other, you know, some other practice that they need to go through before they get there. But
I've also noticed that when I compare the groups that have come through the Institute, say back in the, when I first started getting involved there, it was back mm-hmm. in the late 90s, and to the groups that are coming through now, it does seem to me that there is already quite a shift that's been happening. The people are getting seem to be, have a certain maturity,
mm-hmm.
a certain sense of self-awareness that a lot of people didn't have when I first started coming there. It seemed as if people were kind of just experimenting with a lot of different things. They really had a tremendous number of issues that they brought into the process.
Right.
But I see that that's really shifting already, and I think
mm-hmm.
that for me that's the hope for the future, is that I think we've been looking in the wrong place for a long time, and that hope for the future is within the areas of spirituality and consciousness. That's the new frontier that is going to continue to emerge through 2012 and beyond. And so I think we're living in a very, very exciting time right now as new possibilities are emerging. I've often said before, I don't think the real issue is resources anymore. I think the real issue is imagination. What can we imagine
mm-hmm.
is possible for us as human beings?
It's almost like we now have some receivers. You know, in the past we had a few receivers. You know, we had Tesla and you know
mm-hmm.
some of the other
mm-hmm.
Receivers that in their various fields. But I see that we have a lot of receivers of information coming from the higher mental realms
mm-hmm.
that if you look at the lives of the people in the past, though, that have been such bright lights, their lives were fraught with problems.
Oh, yeah.
You look at Casey. He was never able to make money with what he was doing. Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah.
The value of the information he was bringing in, and yet never, I mean, the dark force opposition to these bright lights was tremendous if you study their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes they ended up in jail or ended up in, I mean, there was just a lot of really horrible things that happened to them. But imagine if the darkness goes away, if the darkness is no longer able to stay just because of, you know, how the energetic alignments are occurring. I think very rapidly we can recover the planet. Yeah, I see it happening very, very quickly, because you have a lot of receivers, and like you said, your receivers are now coming to the Monroe Institute to get their little charge, you know, the little little kickstart. But these people are going to be able to they're not going to have 1,000 issues and 1,000 problems and, you know, all these obstacles that some of the folks had in the past.
You know, Carolyn Mace has a great quote. She says, "We are now called at this time to be mystics without monasteries."
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what's happening is, as you pointed out, in the past, there were, you know, a few people here and there, a few teachers who would come along and try to illuminate and pay the price because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think that we are entering into a time when ordinary people are called to move into these extraordinary states of awareness and extraordinary possibilities for their own lives, and have the courage to do that. And it's probably a little easier now than it was in the past, but they're still on this cutting edge, and until the major shift happens, I think it's always going to be, you're always going to have that tension between what you're doing and what, how you're making your living.
Yeah, I interviewed Dr. Amen, who wrote a book, Healing Anxiety and Depression, and he started out the interview with, "Yes, I've been bleeding on the cutting edge for years."
That's very good.
That was really good. Because he's really brilliant. He got spectra scans. You know, he decided to look at the function of the brain and found there are 7 different types of anxiety and depression. And there's one that affects the temporal lobes, especially in teenagers. And if you give them Prozac, they commit suicide.
Oh.
How smart is that?
Oh.
Isn't that
neat?
Boy.
Yeah.
I just thought, what a great way to, you know, use a tool to measure a function and then categorize based on what you find. I mean, that's just smart.
Hmm.
And yet the psychiatric community is not even interested, you know. It's very, very interesting that so many people have come up with great ideas that are just sitting there right now. And I think though that this will lift eventually, and that the problems will be solved because we're going to have better ideas. I mean,
I think we're right in the middle of it right now, and I think you can tell to some degree because of the chaos that's happening.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Every time you have a shift, it's always preceded by a period of chaos where the old is breaking down, but the new has yet to emerge.
Right.
And so, you know, we're sitting right on that edge of that threshold. It's going to be, who knows what it's going to be, and I think that's part of the interesting aspect of this thing is we don't know. We may catch some glimpses of it along the way, but if it's truly new, that means it's something that's beyond our present experience, and so we have to learn how to live in that state of not knowing to a large extent, and it's that not knowing that creates the opening for and the possibility for something utterly new.
Correct, and I think, though, that with what you're teaching, we can actually send people into you might not say it's really sending them into the future, but sending them into an altered state of consciousness where they can perceive the future. And that may be a better way of putting it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We did this in session, actually it was around 1990, to tell you the truth. And so I went into the future of plastic surgery, breast implants. How's that?
Well, how about that?
And what I saw was that breast implants weren't there anymore, that they had been replaced with something. You know, you have to have the right files for the information, but the information was glycoaminoglycans, which is ground substance. Now, ground substance doesn't have it's not protein, so it doesn't have a allergenic component like, say, injecting collagen would. So now there are actually clinical trials in Europe combining stem cells and the similar glycoaminoglycan type things in serial injections to replace implants. And the FDA is, I talked to the research consultants of this company that had done the research the other day, and they said the FDA is considering whether to accept the European trials or whether to have clinical trials here in the U.S. I just wrote a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, which points out mm-hmm. all the problems, and what's very interesting is within the last month, they've discovered 50 cases of confirmed or suspected lymphoma around textured breast implants. So they're going to have to study that. So I think what I saw in 1990 might be true.
Isn't that amazing?
Very specific information.
Yeah. Well, that's I think that's one of the another interesting thing that people don't talk about very much is as we're moving into this new awareness, one of the things that we're going to have to deal with is a new conception of time.
Right.
Because if it is possible, as you have shown and as we see quite often
mm-hmm.
at the Institute,
yeah.
if it is possible to move forward in time and also possible to move backward in time,
yeah.
is our normal conception of time as being the future moving into the present and then to the past,
mm-hmm.
is that in fact true? Or do these things all coexist simultaneously? And if so, what does that mean about the span of our lives? What does that mean
right.
about, you know, there's so many implications
mm-hmm.
behind that, that we haven't even begun to grapple with. But I think that as it becomes more and more part of the general conversation, that in
mm-hmm.
itself is going to change our perception of the world.
Yeah, let me give you an example of that. Something really funny mm-hmm. happened. My mom has metastatic cancer right now, so I called up the number one doctor in the country, the integrative doctor who's, you know, done the best work on integrative medicine in cancer. And his staff promptly told me that he doesn't speak to anybody. I said, well, that's okay. You ask him these questions. And I asked him a couple of questions. That night I got a page. It was him. He had a flat tire. And we talked for 45 minutes while he waited for AAA. And so I said, well, the first thing you have to determine is their death date. Because if they're going out because it's their death date, you don't do anything. You know, you don't give them chemo, you'll make them miserable. I said, my mom's death date, however, is, and I heard this and confirmed it with another very well-respected psychic, that her death date is after she's 96. So, and that makes sense because everybody, all the women are in her family live that long. So basically, her death date is not now. Well, she went to Mass General and Dana-Farber and all these other, you know, cancer institutes. And, of course, they won't treat her because she's 88.
Are you kidding?
No.
Oh, my.
So, no, that's good. That's good. You don't necessarily want to be treated for cancer at the cancer institutes. Okay, so this gives me a chance to treat her, which is really fun. So, anyway, so I had a very nice conversation with him. But the idea is, why not know the death date? Isn't that an important piece of information to know when
Absolutely.
You're treating anybody? I mean,
Absolutely.
And I got that concept from my work in this dimension, which is outside space-time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized there is a death date, and Deepak Chopra wrote some great things in the Book of Secrets, where he, you know, because the Rishi Masters 5,000 years ago wrote these scrolls with everybody's life on them, their date of their birth and the date of their death, you know, and these have been very, very accurate. So obviously, these Rishi Masters went into the same realm that your participants and I went into when in the 1990 when I got that information and go into now. You know, you go outside of space-time and you can perceive things that are information that are useful within space-time. That's all.
And that in itself brings up another issue, which is even larger than that. You know, if we have an existence that goes outside of space-time,
mm-hmm.
that means that we also exist outside of space-time.
Right.
And now then you're confronted with this issue of, you know, well, who am I exactly? And,
exactly,
and
yeah.
what are the limits of my being? You know, where do
mm-hmm.
I begin and where do I end? If I can access this information, other people can do it as well.
Absolutely.
You know, am I connected to them in some way?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that perennial question of know thyself
mm-hmm.
comes smack dab into the middle of this whole thing. And and we're at a time right now where that question has taken on, for the common person, a huge change from what it's been in the past.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Well, we unfortunately are near the end of our hour. Would you mind giving us some contact information?
Absolutely. People can reach me at the Monroe Institute, and I'll give our website, which is monroeinstitute.org. That's MONROEinstitute.org. And I want to emphasize the .org because we are a nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
The tremendous amount of information at the website there. They can also go to my website, which is for the book, which is spiritualhitchhiker.com. And if they want to get the book, they can always get that through Barnes & Noble or Amazon.
Great. Well, we obviously are right in the middle of a great conversation. So
we are.
I'll have my people contact you and, and get you back on because I really think this is an important concept.
Absolutely.
I think that what you just said is so incredibly important to realize in terms of humanity's spiritual awakening. So, but let me go to announcements now. And like I said, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
My pleasure.
And,
thank you for having me.
I highly recommend the book. It was very amusing, entertaining, and enlightening. Well, next week we have Dr. Norm Shealy on. He is going to be speaking about medical intuition, the science of the soul, his new book, along with some of his research on anti-aging and some science that he has been working on for a while now called the Rejuvimax. And then we have Dr. Daniel Benor on the 12th, Consciousness, Bioenergy, and Healing. And on the 26th, we're going to be talking about Morgellons syndrome. Very interesting, unexplained dermatological and actually systemic disease. We have the Noetic Science meeting on Thursday, June 17th at 7:15 in the Dunwoody office. Dr. Mike Greenberg is going to be giving a talk called A Lifetime of Therapy in One Evening. That should be really good. Anyway, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.
Sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help. For more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong, it was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastico's and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.